Let's roll. Co-pilot on the passenger side, we so fly. Yeah. She so lit, we so high. Just me and my chick, yeah. Just me and my chick, yeah. Co-pilot on the passenger side, we so fly. Yeah. She so lit, we so high. Just me and my chick, yeah. Just me and my chick, yeah. She give me eggs. Yo, 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 what up, y'all? Welcome to another one, man. It's your boy, Rob One, and this is Sparking Conversation. And y'all know what I do each and every week. I get up here and I talk to some of the world's most interesting people. And tonight, I'm going to do the same thing. But before we get into bringing in my guest in, and we're going to get into her story and everything that's going on in her world, you know what I got to do, man. I got to give thanks to all the people that download the audio version of this platform. Because like I say all the time, man, y'all the real MVPs. Y'all out there on Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere that you can stream and download audio versions of podcasts. Y'all be rocking with your boy, and I appreciate that. And y'all all over the world. And I definitely got to give a double shout out to that, because that's amazing. Because I'm telling you, whenever you get in front of these cameras and these microphones and you start doing whatever it is that you're doing, like I say, if it ain't instant, you know, a lot of people, they'll give up on whatever it is that they seem like they're supposed to be doing because they haven't found their purpose. And a lot of times the road to your purpose is not going to be microwavable. Right? You're going to have to throw something in the oven. You're going to have to prepare it. You're going to have to season it. You're going to have to do all those things. You can't just pop it out the freezer, put a couple of slits in the little plastic and pop it in the microwave, and then boom, your life is ready. It don't work like that, right? Although we've been tricked to feel like life works like that. Everything is instant. Everything, you know, is supposed to happen overnight, especially those people who have some type of faith, you know, believing in God because of the miracle. Right? They expect that something to happen right then and there. But a lot of times, some people are going through certain things so they could get the message out of it. But those of us around them may feel a certain way or not. But your purpose is what it's all about. You know what I mean? Like, we're not here just to go to work every day and pay bills. We're not here just to be mothers and fathers. We're not here just to be husbands and wives, boyfriend and girlfriends, brothers and sisters. We're not just here to be that. We have a reason to be here. And a lot of times how we figure out that reason is to go through certain things. So we know that if you believe in yourself enough, and things can manifest for you. It just depends on how you feel about you. Remember, it's called self-esteem. Not everybody else's esteem outside of you. Don't matter what everybody else think. It matter what you think, and it matter about how you feel about you. And if you don't feel a certain way about you, it's going to show in the choices that you make. Right? Facts. The people you hang around. Right? If you don't care about you, everything you do on that end is going to show. I'm telling you, it don't matter. It could be your family members. It could be whatever. If you don't care about yourself, everything and everyone around you is going to reflect that fact that you don't care about yourself. Because all of us, we have to be in a position where we put ourselves first without being selfish. Now, how do we do that? Right? How do we put ourselves first without being selfish? First of all, it's always a balance to everything. You have to be able to be clear and precise, whatever your message is to anyone that gets involved in your life, especially if you play the role of a leader. You have to let them know what your life is about. And if your life is about this thing, if your life is about whatever that version of freedom that you want to express in your life or live in your life, then the people around you have to be on the same page. It's not up to you to be on other people's page. It's up to them to want to be on your page. And then vice versa. If you want them to be on your life, you're going to have to be on their page too. And they may not be the same as yours. Right? But that's where it comes with the balance, because most of us don't even know what we're capable of doing until we get around somebody else that's doing it. I mean, it's just a fact. You don't got to copy nobody. You know how many people that film with me that ain't never filmed before? And word, Nikki, just start off with just me asking them, you know what I'm saying? This is what we're doing. You feel like that's something you could do? Let's come try it. And then next thing you know, it changes their lives. It gives them a certain different type of mission. It gives them this thing that they always dreamed about, but they never thought that they could do, because we have been so fascinated with trying to get to wherever Hollywood is. But then we hear all the stories that's going on coming out of Hollywood. We all know right now that's probably not the place you want to be.
Now, I understand people want to be famous, and I understand people want this money and all that, but a lot of it, a lot of different things come with that. And y'all know people are giving up certain parts of their body that they ain't meant for to be given up just to have a little something that other people may be a little envious of, except for the people who gave it to you. The people who gave it to you don't care about what they giving you, long as you give them what they want. How many of y'all understand that? Now, this is what make you get out there and open up your own camera and start filming your own stuff. This is what makes you wear your own gear. This is what makes you get up here on these podcasts or whatever you're going to do and be consistent with it each and every week. Even if you have one viewer or if you got 1,001 viewers, 100,001 viewers, either way it go, you got to have the same energy for whatever you do. You know what I'm saying? I remember when doing music, before I even got to the place where I was touring and stuff like that. Listen, I was doing shows where it was only two people in there outside of the people who came to perform. I'm talking about, and then they came with somebody. So you had to build up till I got to the stadiums and all that big stuff that happened, all the touring up and down and all the other shit that I was able to experience. But I had to start from somewhere. And if I would have gave up at the fact that I went to a first show of mine and it was only two people in there, then I would have never got to experience what it's like to even live that life. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing now with the platform. So all y'all that rock with the platform, I appreciate y'all. Thank y'all so much from the bottom of my heart. I'm going to make sure that I say that each and every week, man. I'm probably not going to run off from the tangent like that, but I just want y'all to know how much I appreciate the fact that y'all check in with me each and every week. Y'all leave comments up there. Y'all share the content after the show. All love. I appreciate it, for real. Okay, bet. So I got to give it up for Kill No One Part 1. Y'all showing out. It's still doing numbers. Thank y'all so much for everybody that's pushing play on Kill No One Part 1. It is pinned to my timeline if you're on Facebook. And if you are everywhere else, all you got to do is type in the hashtag RAH1, R-A-H and the number 1, and you'll get it. Kill No One, and you'll find it, especially if you're on YouTube, right? So double shout out to y'all. Also, I want to let y'all know, you know, the new merch is ready. You know what I'm saying? If y'all can see this, you know. So if y'all want to support y'all boy, y'all know what to do. Hit me up. The link's in the description. All y'all got to do is place the order. I get the shirt out to you. You're going to be fly. We're going to be good the whole nine. It's what we do. We help each other, right? All right? If y'all feeling in your heart the want to support your boy, you know what I'm saying? Collective way in the building. So just rock with your boy, man. Let's get some things going on, all right? Okay. Now, before I bring my guest up and all that, y'all know what I got to do. I got to give y'all this food for the week, man, because it's been a lot going on in the week. And I know last week I was talking a little bit about the floods, you know what I'm saying? And my condolences to all the people in the floods and stuff, especially out in Texas. And then the fact that, you know what I'm saying, was mad little girls that's missing on top of the ones that they found. And then they found hundreds of other people. We talked about that. But then I always wonder about things, right? Because it didn't seem natural. Now, all the conspiracy theorists out there, that's your life. I'm not living conspiracies. I'm just going based off facts because it's what people are showing. It's not, I don't have to make up nothing. I just look at it. Like the fact that it happened that way, we know that it was unnatural for it to happen that way. So we just want to know why, right? And sometimes when you put two and two together, it's crazy because the group of people that was turned up missing first, the 25 people was all from this camp. And then it's like a lot of other girls that's missing from this camp. So my thing is like, all right, bet. So why was the camp the focus? Why is that the thing that they started off with? Especially if they found hundreds of other people, you know, that was unalive due to the flooding. So I'm like, yo, why that? So then when you go and investigate, you figure out what that camp is and who actually goes to the camp. Then you find out it's the children of all of these people that's in the government. The Congress people, the senators and judges and all these other things, their children are the ones who go to this camp. It's not just a regular camp. This ain't a camp just for anybody to come up there and say, yo, they got the summer program, come through. We're going to drop y'all off and we're going to pick y'all up. Nah, this ain't that type of camp. This camp is for the people who already, right? So then when you think about all these things that's going on, all these backdoor things, all these certain lists and all these other things that people talk about do exist, didn't exist, now it is, now it ain't, all the stuff that people looking for, the people who's making the most noise about it and talking about it and wanting to get everything out, is the parents of these children that go to this camp. Now listen, y'all, all y'all got to do is do the research. For me, that's just crazy. The biological weapons that they're using, atmospheric weapons that's being used in order to control certain narratives and control people. You know what I'm saying? Like, they go after whatever you love if you start talking about other things that they don't want you to talk about. And that's why it's crazy. And that's why I always say on this platform, look, I ain't got to live in a world of conspiracy. We just got to go by the facts. People can't get mad at the facts. Now, listen, they can get mad about all that other stuff, but they can't get mad at the facts. All we got to do is put it together. And if we put it together, it's crazy because look at this. Now, we go from Texas and we talked about North Carolina, right? But we also see New Jersey, my home state of New Jersey, man. It's flooding like crazy, but the water not coming from the sky. This is what's really crazy, yo. The water coming from the ground. Y'all got to help me out here, yo. Like, I don't want to be the only one that sit up here and say to himself that I want to just think that it's a group of people who we pay. Because remember, until they go ahead and start doing what all they're doing with the tariffs and all that and everything kick in where they saying they're not going to take no income tax for people who make less than $150K solo, you still paying taxes and your tax dollars is going to the same people who is turning around doing stuff like this. This is what I'm saying, that we pay people to harm us. And this is a fact. Why? Because we won't stick together, because we keep looking at each other based on the skin color, right? That's what keeping us separate. We keep looking at each other based on a religion. That's what's keeping us separate. We keep looking at each other based on height, right? All this other stuff that's going on in the world, to the fact that we can't pay attention to what's going on right in front of us. Like, yo, they changing the whole financial system on our ass. And if y'all not paying attention to that, I don't know what y'all doing. Do y'all know that the reports that's coming in, and listen, everything I'm saying is going to tie into what we got going on with my guests tonight, because I'm telling y'all, it's a such thing as a bunch of people in the places that they shouldn't be doing whatever they want to people like us because we don't stick together. So listen, do y'all know that based on the tariffs that's coming in, because I know a lot of y'all don't, y'all only pay attention to what somebody's screaming, but y'all don't pay attention. Do you know they're bringing in $2 billion a day because of the new tariffs? Did y'all know that? This ain't got nothing to do with what side you pick. We don't care about that, yo. Like, where is born? I don't care about if you're a Democrat or Republican. I don't care about that. That don't mean nothing. It's the same bird. One wing on the other wing. You can't fly without both of them. So either way it go, that's just how it is. But what I'm saying to you is about business is business, and we all got to pay attention to business, because, look, if y'all go to work for somebody each and every day and every week, I promise you, whatever they're paying you, you personally are making them 100 times more than that. Trust me. You know what I'm saying? The people that's paying y'all, that write y'all checks, how much do you think their check is? We get so hype over all these basketball players and how much money they make a year. Oh, this person got 90 million. This person got 100 million. But damn, so how much is the person that's making that wrote the check? We don't ever think about the check writers. We don't follow the money. We follow the look of money. We follow the people that look like they got money. But we don't follow the real people who got money, because the real people who got money don't even touch money. So until we figure that out, we're going to keep being behind the eight ball, and we can't stay back there. Because if you think about it, they got New Jersey, New York, Philadelphia, well, Pennsylvania, Texas, North Carolina, and Iowa underwater in certain places right now. Do y'all not understand? Like, this is the way they test everything to figure it out. See how we're going to react. Think about all the things that we're going to do. And that's just bananas to me that ain't what y'all paying attention to. Right? They're trying to make United States the number one industrial hub in the world when it comes to a couple of things, technology and cryptocurrency, still technically technology. But they also bring back all the other stuff, drilling, oil, so fracking, all this, everything else is coming back. Manufacturers, cars, all these other things is coming back. So when y'all think about y'all new careers and how y'all could get in there and make something shake and change your life around, I don't know if y'all paying attention to it, but you know, they rushing, not rushing, they're trying to force these people to lower these interest rates. Why? So they could print some money. Why? So they could lower the dollar and crash it more. Why? So y'all can go ahead and figure out what's going on in the world of the digital space. And then if y'all not paying attention to the digital space right now and how you can be free before all that, because let me tell y'all, whoever created crypto, I know. Everybody is talking about all this other crazy shit, but I'm telling y'all, the person who invented it, they did not have the elite people in mind. The elite people just who got the money to go ahead and get the bulk of it, but they can't get it all. The fact that we don't know about it, I ain't gonna say we, but most of y'all out there don't know about it, is the fact that they're gonna keep buying it up. And then listen, I'm telling y'all, it didn't make it for them. And listen, a few people out here, they're going to be all right. And the rest of y'all are going to be sitting around here playing because you're not paying attention to what you need to pay attention to. And then this is what happens. So my guest tonight, I'm going to bring my guest up in a minute, because tonight, let me tell y'all something. I have another mom on the platform, right? Fighting for her child. Wrongly convicted. Now, let me tell y'all, that's been a current theme for the last three shows that I had. I had the brother Tyron Hill on, who was actually wrongfully convicted for a double homicide of two women in New Jersey. And he was just pulled out of a lineup, and he was nowhere near it, didn't have nothing to do with it, or none of that. He had to spend 16 years in prison on a 60-year bid in order for him to get exonerated. But he did, but wrongfully convicted. I had the other mother on before that, Rashonda Hill, her son. Yo, they picked him up walking. And he's in prison on a 30-year joint. And listen, they just picked him up walking. And now I got Miss Jamie on tonight, yo, right? To the point where her son's case, it's been turned into a book. And listen, When we get into this tonight, man, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because what I want for her to be the one that really give y'all the juice that's going on. But, you know, the true crime author, Donna Waters, and for all y'all out there that's in the books and y'all into crime books, y'all go look her up, right? She wrote the book on her son's case, which is titled The Wrong Ride Home. And the subtitle is Exposing Systematic Failures and Wrongful Convictions. Now, look, I don't know about y'all, but this is something that a lot of people should pay attention to, because even though I only named these three cases, remember, I've had about four or five other cases on of people that are in prison right now, wrongfully accused. So look, I'm going to bring her up real quick so we can get into this, all right? We got to talk about it, all right? So let's see. Jamie, hi.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm okay. Okay, it's good. Nice to be here.
good. I'm glad you're here. And so this is what we're going to do, because we know that you know, you're fighting for your son and the whole nine. So what I need you to do for me is just introduce yourself to the audience and then let them know why you're on the platform this evening.
My name's Jamie Sell. I'm a registered nurse. I live in Youngstown, Ohio. I am a traveling registered nurse. I work in intensive care units in different states. So that I can afford to keep fighting my son's case. This started for us back in 2017 when a young man named Brandon Sample come up missing, and my son had seen him the night before. And Brandon was with another gentleman. They had given my son a ride home, and after he dropped my son off and the two of them left the next day, there was a social media blitz, saying that Brandon was missing. I don't know if it was the next day or the day after, but they said he was missing. They were looking for him. And then eventually they said that his car was found a couple cities away in Niles, Ohio, in a bicycle path. And they also said on these social media posts that my son was the last one to see him alive. And so then it just started this frenzy of people friend requesting my son, accusing him, asking him tons of questions. He was trying to answer, you know, every, like the friends and family, you know, with as much as he could remember or recall. And then it just escalated from there because Brandon's body was found a few days later on the, so he, I think he was missing from it, the evening from the 11th into the 12th in July. And, or I'm sorry, maybe it was June. It was June. And then the 15th is when they found his body, and his body was in North Bloomfield, Ohio, which was a neighboring city over from us, at a place called Hatchet Man Road, which is a nickname that the locals give, you know, that wooded area. And so a group of kids that were known to my son got together, and they said that they heard my son say he did it, you know, after all this social media blitz was going on. And as facts were, you know, evolving in the news, they kept going back to the police and delivering, you know, more information. And 10 days later, there was a Pizza Joe's robbery in Cortland, Ohio. My son was, they were looking for my son on a murder warrant based on the testimony from these kids saying that they heard him say he did it. And, so when they were pinging his phone to get him for the murder warrant, there was a robbery at a Pizza Joe's across the street. And the girls said that a mixed race male robbed them in both of their statements. And they picked my son up, who's white, and said that he was also being accused of this Pizza Joe's robbery. And so they basically took both of these cases that were unrelated and put them in the same trial together because they didn't have any evidence for this murder case and they wanted to prejudice it. So they prejudiced it with this, you know, this robbery case that they also wrapped him up in. And pretty much that's what, you know, this book is about. And it's a still ongoing today.
Yo, that is crazy, because here I'm thinking, like, even for him getting a ride home, and that's what, to me, I don't understand how a person can really wrap him in it after they, you know, the understanding that he was dropped off. Like, if he was dropped off
and riding with his best friend. So the best friend was actually the one who saw him after Austin was dropped off. But the best friend testified in trial and said they never picked Austin up and never dropped him off. And that's the weird thing, because they did cell site location information, and the data showed that my son was right where he said he was at Willow Lake with his family. And it showed that at about the time that my son said he was picked up by Brandon Sample, it showed, you know, him being dropped off in our driveway at the correct time. And then it also showed that he was at a nearby friend's house for part of the evening, which was nearby our home. And or he was located at our home, you know, throughout the evening. But then there's a lot of twists and turns in this story as far as the evidence goes, as, you know, I could get into that as time goes by. But and then later on, after my son goes to trial, which we didn't even really know much about what was even going to transpire in the trial, because the attorneys that I hired, you know, my son had all the discovery in the jail and his bond was $1 million. Well, I couldn't afford an attorney and to bond him out. And so we couldn't communicate over the jail phone. We were told not to communicate. And so I couldn't find any information out to even help him. And what I was being fed was, you know, just a little bit here and there. And it wasn't until the trial actually happened that I really found out what was going on in this case. After the trial was over, and I couldn't figure out how he was even convicted with no evidence. I ended up obtaining his discovery from the jail because they shipped him off to prison and didn't send him with his discovery. Well, I picked it up at the jail, and I also found some evidence in his property at the jail. And I started investigating the case myself. And over the years, I started uncovering more and more evidence, more and more information that things had been destroyed or skewed. I found new witnesses and discovered, you know, that they had, wrapped my son up in this case and that he had nothing to do with.
So, all right. So this is a couple of questions that I have for you. The first one is, so his supposedly best friend went to court and testified against him by
the victim. The victim's best friend was riding with him. The victim's best friend.
Okay, so the victim's best friend was riding with them, and they didn't.
They picked,
so told them that he did. They wait. So they told that they testified that they didn't drop your son off or pick him up.
Well, one of them was dead. And well, so Brandon died. And then his best friend had been riding in the car with him. He claimed that they never picked my son up that night and that he never met him. And then I find out he was one of the ones that was feeding information to the detectives about Austin being the last one that saw him alive. It was very strange and things weren't making sense to me. And so I was like, and you could tell the kid was lying on the stand. And all the kids that testified, actually not one of their stories matched the other. They were inconsistent. It was hearsay statements. You find out that these kids are the ones that told the detectives where to find the body. And they said, oh, well, we heard it from Austin. And then when I started investigating and I started getting the witness interviews and I see that there's injuries to one of the kids' hands and it's wrapped up in an ACE wrap. And then you hear in trial that the best friend had injuries to his knuckles and hand too. And it's like, wait a minute. You know, you've got these kids that have got injuries that are up there testifying and they're lying and telling all these inconsistent statements. My son didn't have an injury on him, you know, not a single injury. And he had alibis, but our own defense attorney never provided a single witness for the defense. He told me and my younger son that they didn't need to bring any witnesses because Austin never should have been charged and there was no case. So he said we didn't have to bring any witnesses. And so none of his alibis, you know, got up to testify. And as a matter of fact, they had experts that testified for the state, but we were denied experts for the defense. So my son wasn't allowed to have an expert to help in his own defense. He was 18 when he was picked up on this. And so they had the Bureau of Criminal Investigation, who works for the Ohio Attorney General. They're the ones who, you know, do like forensics for the state and what have you. And so they had somebody who claimed to be a cell phone expert. But when you read her credentials, it said she was actually a computer expert, not a cell phone expert. And then they had somebody who testified as a cell site data expert with the AT&T information from my son's cell phone. And there was a disclaimer that said that nobody was supposed to testify to that except for AT&T. Well, they searched and seized my son's cell site data without a warrant. But beyond that, when I did a public records request for the prosecutor's file, I found thank you letters in there from the prosecutor to BCI. And one of the thank you letters was thanking BCI for spending hours the first day of trial tweaking the maps to fit the crime. And I was like, what does that mean? So that's when I went back and I looked a little closer at these cell site data maps and I saw that there was two different sets. Well, the one that was dated for the first day of trial was missing information that was in the first set. And I noticed that the information that was missing was the GPS data. So they took all the GPS out and all they had was the location data of the cell towers themselves, where they were located, not where the handset or the phone was located. So wow. That was That was very shady. So, of course, they don't want us to have an expert. They don't want us to have an expert. But in cross-examination, that BCI expert did admit that my son was never located near the body or the car that was dumped. They did admit that. And I was like, and so whenever, you know, this came out in cross-examination, the prosecutor literally says, well, just because he was never located doesn't mean that in between pings, he couldn't have done it. What? That's like non-evidence. I could have done it in between. Anybody could have done. Like you were using non-evidence to suggest to the jury that he was there in between pings, but you have no evidence of this. Like all of the evidence, it was the most absurd thing I'd ever heard or seen in my life. There was no bullet. There was no fragment. There was no ballistics. You know, they said that they used metal detectors around the area of the body twice and never found any bullets. There was no bullet inside of the body either. So if there's like an entry wound and no exit wound, where'd the bullet go?
Wow. And so he got shot too?
Yeah, he was shot. That was how the kid died. And so all of the autopsy photos magically disappeared. And that was the words of the coroner. They magically disappeared. There was only one photo and it was a simple bullet hole, you know, on the bullet hole that was on the victim. And that was it. That's the only photo they had. All the other photos were gone. And so, there was a tarp a foot away from the body and they didn't collect that for evidence. They said they didn't need to.
Yo, so let me ask you about these kids. Well, at least the two that, well, the one that the best friend or whatever. So are they like part of a wealthy family or do they have some type of situation going on like that for all of them to be working together like that?
So I didn't know it at the time. But what I did know, or what I was able to find after the trial, was that the best friend was on heroin. And my son even told the police and the family members that when they gave him a ride home, my son was in the back seat, the victim and the best friend were in the front seat, they started to snort, well, my son called it boy, and they offered it to him, and he said, nah. You know, he declined. And so he told the police this, but then they all refuted and said, oh, no, that can't possibly be. They don't do heroin, blah, blah, blah. But then it was recognized and admitted by the family and everybody that he had a drug problem. So they were trying to discredit my son and make it look like he was making statements that weren't true. But it absolutely was true. It was known that, you know, that this Josh White, which is the best friend, had a addiction problem. And so did the victim. And so these other kids that came forward to testify and said that they heard my son say he did it, and the ones who gave the location of the body, they came from families that were also, you know, a family of addicts with large criminal histories. And they actually lived a mile from where the car was dumped in Niles, Ohio. So they had injuries. They lived a mile away from the car. My son lived 20 minutes away from the car. And then after the trial's over, we have new witnesses come forward and say that they've been admitting all over town that they committed the murder themselves and blamed it on my son.
Yeah, because it all looks that way. But what
they were running interference.
Yeah, but what I'm shocked about is the state, right? And the people, because. Like, I know for lawyers and stuff like that, judges and stuff, they're supposed to be trained to know, like, if people are lying and certain body measures and certain ways that they do. It's like these are the things that they look for in order for them to know what's going on. And the fact that they didn't give none of these kids lie detector tests, make sure that they wasn't lying. I mean, like, all of these different things to make sure they got the right person. Not just
I feel like they kind of had a suspicion, or they knew that my son had nothing to do with this. That's what I feel. My feeling is they say that they never fingerprinted the victim's car. They never took any photos inside of the car. There was a video that we found existed that never was produced, never used in trial. There was another video of the area across from the bicycle path that shown the car going into the path. They didn't give that to our defense attorney until the first day of trial. What? That's almost a year later. And he didn't even have enough time to investigate the video to do anything with it. So when I investigated the video, I was able to get a lot of information from that video. And so the jury never had the benefit of even knowing what was going on in that video. There's just so much. I mean, the victim's clothes were destroyed. The coroner admitted that could be tested for stippling. You know, the car was sold within a couple months. Like that should have been evidence, and that was sold like at auction, like immediately. Here, that car had OnStar. They could have gotten information from the OnStar of that location and seen if that, because the victim supposedly took his best friend home to Akron that night. Well, if you didn't check the OnStar and you didn't check the best friend's cell phone, I mean, you checked my son's cell phone, you know, location data, right, but you didn't check a single other person's location data to see where they were. And they never checked the victim's location data. So they could have easily matched those up to see if my son and that victim were together that night. They could have seen if that Josh White ever went to Akron that night, you know, or did Josh White go with Brandon Sample, the victim, over to these other kids' homes, you know, and was involved in this murder. And then later on, after this is all said and done and I investigate, I find out that there's a connection between the best friend and these other kids, that the best friend's aunt lived in the same home as these kids' mother and aunt, because the mother, this Mary Roop, lived in this garage, and then the best friend's aunt lived in the home, and they were best friends.
Wow.
And I find out that so there was a tie between the best friends and this set of kids that were accusing my son.
No, saying so they were all
using. So these kids knew from the best friend that they had picked Austin up, and they all used runner interference and lies and this and that to detract the attention away from themselves.
And but it's still like, even with everything that's going on, it still seemed like that shouldn't have worked. I'm like I said, it's just crazy that they just wanted to get anybody instead of getting the right person. And I think that's,
they wanted whoever looked good for it, you know. And a lot of those kids were juveniles. They were juveniles. The only one that was an adult was the best friend. And then my son was 18, getting ready to be 19, you know. And then so since they kept testing all these bags for DNA, and they kept coming up empty handed. So everything that they tested to try to point this, it's like they had tunnel vision. They started with a theory, and then they worked their way backwards rather than the other way around. And so every time they were like looking for evidence and they couldn't find any, they would either bury or hide something that pointed away from it. Or they would just use smoke and mirrors, like, and they had paraded all these kids in there, and every one of them told a different story. Like, they didn't even tell the same stories. There wasn't the same people involved. Even the newspaper said that these kids had conflicting, confusing stories. And it's like, what did you just convict my son on? There was no evidence that he had anything to do with these crimes.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question. So how long has he been in prison so far?
8 years. And the story about what's happened since he's been in prison, because the victim in this case was a correction officer's son. And so can you imagine going into prison in Ohio, being accused of killing a correction officer's son? So they send my son straight to a maximum security prison with no evidence that he committed any of these crimes. And they were setting him up and torturing him these last 8 years. They even, so when they couldn't kill him through conventional ways by having other prisoners, you know, attack them with weapons or whatever. Now, my son's a black belt fighter. I didn't say that. He's a black belt martial arts fighter. He is a very good one. He's had gold medals in many tournaments. Him and a buddy was attacked by three gang members with knives, and they probably expected my son and his buddy to get hurt. His buddy got stabbed in the eye. My son beat all three of those guys up with their weapons. So listen to this. Those guys who approached them with weapons and stabbed his buddy in the eye, they get 6 months and sent to a better prison. And they get 6 months in solitary. My son gets a year in solitary and left there to be set up some more, like over a period of time. Now, why would my son, who saved this kid's life, get a year? You know, and these two didn't have weapons. They were not the aggressors. And then the three that attacked them get a lesser sentence. Yeah. How does that work out? And so, so more time goes by, you know, and more things were happening. And it was obvious that my son was being set up. So when they couldn't kill my son, they set him up in a fight with the leader of the Mexican mafia from Arizona. He was an interstate compact prisoner. The COs literally, when the entire range was empty, my son was in an upper range, and this Melendez guy was in a lower range. Melendez, out of nowhere, starts threatening to kill my son from inside of his cell, and there's a CO in between the two of them with body cam running, and he hears Melendez threatening to kill my son, and instead of throwing Melendez in the hole, he goes and locks himself in the bubble. There's nobody else on the block, and pops both of their doors. And Melendez makes a beeline straight for the stairs where my son's coming down. And there's a fight. And whether they intended for Melendez to kill my son, I don't know. But Melendez ended up dying. It was like a 12-second fight. He wasn't healthy enough to withstand a fight with a 25-year-old black belt, you know. But yeah, he ends up dying. And then they charge my son with murder in the prison. So, yeah. So, then they administratively give my son 10 years of solitary confinement and make him a porter. And do you know what a porter is? That's like the most trusted prisoner on the block. You know, they let them out to pass out trays and do all. So he's so dangerous, but yet they give him a job as a porter after all this. So they charge him with aggravated murder. He ends up taking a plea bargain for 10 years, and the prosecutor says on video that my son was defending himself and that he tried a similar case that ended up in an acquittal, but he still charged my son and still made him take a plea bargain, knowing full well that my son was defending himself in this circumstance, you know? So this is the type of retaliation my son's been facing. We threatened to sue the prison. My son earned his paralegal while he was in prison. I signed him up for Blackstone University's paralegal program, and he was on the dean's list. He graduated. He was filing grievances for all of these things that they were doing to him. And I can't sit here all day and list everything they were doing, but they were doing a lot of ignorant things, throwing his mail away, all kinds of stuff. And so, he writes the grievances. He escalates them all the way to the top. He keeps meticulous records. I'm keeping records from the outside of his grievances. I write a very poignant letter to Columbus, and we did research and found out that they had to pay out like millions in lawsuits for some of the things that they were doing to my son. And I asked Columbus in a letter, after listing all the grievance numbers, all the dispositions, the dates, the times, you know, whether they were granted or what happened with them. And I said to them, I said, how are you being equitable to the taxpayers when you've already paid out, what, $28 million for a lawsuit that is exactly the same as these things that my son is alleging against you, except what you're doing to my son's worse than what you did in this lawsuit you already paid out? I said, and you're still continuing to do the same behaviors that you've already, you know, been responsible for. So the very next day, they like went to my son's cell, the inspector went to my son's cell, and said, okay, you're being transferred. We've been asking for a transfer for years because of the way they've been treating him. They finally, after this letter, and we spelled it all out to them, decide, you know, they ask him to sign permission to go out of state. They said, oh, you can't go in state. They're not taking level fives anywhere in Ohio, which was a lie. They just wanted him to sign permission to go out of state. So he signed it because they had him in a cell called a glass house, but this was a special glass house. It wasn't like all the other glass houses. It was half the size, and there was plexiglass on all the on the ventilation. So he was in this cell with no ventilation, and it was so hot in there during the hot days of the summer that his clothes would dry stiff in 2 hours. And they expected him to kill himself because that's normally what people would do in those circumstances. But my son is a lot more disciplined than others, and he can withstand a lot more torture because I told you he was a black belt in World Taekwondo. He took it. So when they couldn't kill him and they couldn't make him kill himself, they sent him to Colorado. And now he's in Florence, Colorado, awaiting the ADMAX, which is the most secure federal prison in the country.
Okay, so okay, so are there any hopes of him actually getting, you know, like actually being called for anything? Like he's just done. He got to do, all right, so he's been in there for 8.
Well, we're not done with our appeal.
Okay, so what about the 10 years? So he's been in there for 8. Did this happen? How much more time is he expected to do?
Oh, they gave him like some ridiculous, I don't know, 50 years, I don't know, 48 plus 11 plus this 10. Like when somebody is wrongfully convicted, a good indication of a wrongful conviction is, one, they'll have a jailhouse snitch. Number two, they'll give them a ridiculous sentence that is like exceedingly high. And then the media will be all over it. And they'll be just, I mean, the media would not even talk to us at all. They would just report whatever the prosecutor was telling them. And so they were stigmatizing our family and refusing to give us a voice. And so you pretty much get convicted before you even go to trial. And when anybody looks the case up, you know, they're like, oh, I read about this, you know, he's guilty. And they think he's guilty just because they read it in the paper or they saw it on the news. They don't actually, nobody's going to take the time to dig into the case like I did. And so it got to the point where I wasn't able to have a voice, so I had to make my own. So I created a social media account, and I said, well, they use social media and the media to convict my son. I'm going to have to use social media to counteract the lies that they told. And so I started out, you know, back right after the trial, and I said, look at this, you know, they said that, you know, they were looking for a white male, you know, in reference to this Pizza Joe's robbery, but both of the girls that were robbed, here's their statements, and they both say it was a mixed race male that robbed them. What is going on here? And so then I found the documents where the prosecutor ordered for the victim's clothes to be destroyed. And so I started finding all this evidence, and I was like, okay, I'm going to reveal it to the public. And that's what I started doing. I started revealing it to the public. And then as time was going by, I was collecting. I mean, I still collected evidence just this year, and it's been 8 years. And we recently discovered that the prosecutor made a fraudulent affidavit in somebody else's name to give an alibi to the real murderer. We just discovered that this year. We turned it into the district court, the federal courts, and they didn't even argue that point yet, but that is in the book. But I did. So whenever we filed the post-conviction appeal, which is the appeal that you, so there's two different types of appeals. There's the direct appeal, mm-hmm. which is like all the procedural issues with the case. And then there's your post-conviction appeal, which is like new evidence that the jury didn't get to hear. So anyhow, you only have like a year to file these things. So that's kind of ridiculous, because years later you could be finding new evidence and you're stuck with whatever, you know, the original appeal was. You're scrambling for a year to try to hurry up and find what you can, you know, to get into these appeals. Well, whenever they get denied in the lower courts, which usually happens because those judges, they are they are elected, and so they don't want to be unpopular in the public's eye. So a lot of times they rubber stamp whatever the prosecutor says, regardless of whatever your appeal says. So it gets up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court denies it on a technicality. They deny jurisdiction. They say, well, you know, the trial court judge is the same judge that denied the post-conviction appeal, and so therefore we don't have jurisdiction. But then the other two judges in the Supreme Court dissented and said, hey, we don't agree with this. We think that if he, you know, that it was kind of shady that the judge and the prosecutor, you know, view these records that obviously they were curious about and sealed them without showing them to the defense. Well, these records were in relation to an alibi that the prosecutor gave to the real murderer that our new witnesses named. Okay. So. So why did you seal these records? You sealed them because you knew what they were going to show us, right? So instead of showing us these records, the prosecutor pops up with this affidavit from the JJC saying, oh, this kid couldn't have committed this murder. He was locked up in JJC at the time. And he's got this administrator that supposedly signs this affidavit. So years later, I do a public records request for that affidavit from that JJC administrator, and he said he had nothing to do with it. He's never written an affidavit in his entire life, and he specifically never wrote any affidavits in my son's case. And it's like, wow, that's something. Like, he didn't even write this affidavit. He had nothing to do with it.
That's crazy.
So
I'm going to be honest with you. And this is something that it's not said a lot, right, from what I'm about to say, because in a lot of instances, we think that when the law is against a person or they just want a person, it always looks like it's just people who look like me, right? Like, we go through the worst when it comes down to the police and different things that they do and trumping up charges and just pulling things out of thin air just to accuse you. And, you know, just by looking a certain way, they're gonna throw it on you. But the fact that it's happening, that it happened to you and your son happens to be just, a white male who they say these type of things don't happen to. I'm very glad that you came on the platform this evening, because this goes back to what I say all the time about the fact that we don't stick together. Like, I think that a lot of people think that what separates us is the things that we can see that's different versus the things that we know that we have alike and what we have in common. And most of us all have the same thing in common. It's if you're not on this side, you're not on that side. And that's all it's about. It has nothing to do. When people are on a certain side, they can care less about your color. Right? It's all about what they want and their agenda and how they can use you in order to benefit themselves. And the way that they just run people through prison, no matter what, it's always a money thing. It always comes back to the money. So I want to be honest with you. Everything that you're going through and the things that your son is going through, man, I'm going to be honest. I pray for y'all, man, because it's very unfortunate, regardless of what the color of a person is. It's just the fact of everything that's going on. It's just sad that that's what our justice system is broken down to. Not about what's right, not about the facts, just about conviction.
Well, you know what's happened is, so I started studying a lot of cases of people who've been exonerated, and you can do that too. There's like this study, and I want to say that if you Google, I don't know why it doesn't come to my head right now, but it's out of Michigan. Like, there is a whole website that compiles every exoneration in United States history, and it goes through every single story of every person, and some of the most egregious ones come from Ohio, like the Shame of Lorraine. Now, that was ridiculous what they did to Nancy Smith and Joseph Allen out there in Lorraine. It was ignorant. Like, those two people didn't even know each other, and they said they were boyfriend and girlfriend, and they raped or they were molesting these Head Start kids, and it was all about money. So anyhow, when I started like researching other cases, meeting exonerees, hearing their stories, I find out that the same things happened to them, especially when they were in the prison. They literally were retaliated on in the prison, and many of them were sent to Lucasville also. And I thought they were just doing this to my son, here they did it to these people too. So this is like, it's like the prison works with these, and I don't know where it's coming from. Is it the prosecutor calling the prison and telling them to do these things? But my friend Tony Viola, he's a white male. He was a very wealthy real estate broker. They framed him and 100 other families in the biggest housing market crisis in the country. And they said that he wrote 0% down mortgages for people that had bad credit. And he wasn't even a mortgage broker. He didn't write mortgages. JP Morgan even said, "We're not a victim. There's no missing money." And they still convicted him, put him in prison, and took all his property. Like, this happens to everybody. Man, woman, white, black, it don't matter who you are. It don't matter how rich you are and how poor you are. If they want something from you, they're going to get it. And they don't care what you look like and who you are. They'll do it to anybody. They'll do it to football players. They'll do it to, look at Jimmy Carter down there in Florida. I mean, it don't matter who you are. It don't matter how famous you are, how not famous you are. They will frame you. You have to study these other cases in order to see the tricks that they've done to other people so that you can see how they've done it to you if you suspect that there's something funny in your loved one's case.
Right. Hey, listen, I'm going to be honest with you, man. You've given a lot of great information tonight, and I'm telling you, man, you are on it. Your son is lucky to have a mom like you. And I just see y'all getting to the end of this. This is going to be major. And you know, whenever the appeal happens and everything goes through, I want you to, you know, we're going to stay in contact between now and then, because Meg is definitely down with you. And so we're going to figure this out, because I want to make sure that we stay connected so you can have a platform to continue to give information out. Because I also, you know, not only do I do this live, and we also have, you know, I clip it down and I help market and promote people, you know, that be on the show. I mean, we want to continue to give people an outlet and a voice that they could tell a story, because at the end of the day, that's what we have to do. Like, we have to be there for the people, because if anything ever happens, we want those people to be there for us. And I think that's what we're missing out here in the world. We're missing the fact that there are a bunch of people out here going through the same things, even though they don't look the same. And even though the world is set up for all of us out here to look like we should be against each other, and everything that they're putting out there in the media to try to force people to be against each other, we realize that we have more things in common than we don't. And we should focus on those things in order for us to continue to grow. But I want you to do this for me, because the book, because before we get out of here, we got to make sure that you plug the book, because
Donna Waters.
She
studied this case for 5 years.
And I mentioned her earlier, and this is Donna Waters, and she just said the National Exoneree Registry is where, you know, you guys can go look up all the exoneree cases, like Jamie was saying. So,
Donna, it's a very good idea to study those cases and see what happened to these people, because it can happen to you. It could have happened to one of your loved ones, and you don't know. It's people need to know. And Donna, I have to thank her, because for 5 years she worked with us, and I mean, it was a triggering experience. There was a lot of weeping, there was a lot of mourning, especially when Austin got in that fight with Melendez. Like, I'm not going to tell you, that was the darkest day of my life. I thought that going through this trial and him being convicted was the darkest day of my life. I thought it was all over. I thought it was all over that day. I can't even tell you. I don't even want to tell you what was going through my head that day. But we've been through a lot together, and we came this far. I don't know how we did. I mean, you can even ask her. Like, it was hard. We had some really hard days, but we made it to the other side. She got the book done. There's going to be another book, because obviously we don't have all the evidence in there, because all of it hasn't even been litigated yet. So, but what we need is we need people to know that that this has gone on. And Davis Vanguard just assigned some of their interns to my son's case. Jason Flom has been helping us. The Innocence Project has been in close communication, but we do have private attorneys. But like we have been very fortunate to get as much help as we have, but it was because I worked every single day that I was not working at my regular job, just going through the evidence. I mean, highlighting patterns, like, and I was incessant to the point where, I mean, relationships that I had dissolved because I was too focused on my son's case, but I had to be because I knew he didn't do this. And, right. And I couldn't let him, I have other sons. I couldn't let this go on, and I couldn't tell my other sons, I'm sorry, you know, this is just the way it is. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. And the things that, you know, we're willing to do for our children, as long as, you know, and it's a thing for them to know, because a lot of us grow up without that sense of security from our parents that they will do anything for us. You know, a lot of us.
Well, that injustice trauma is hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, some of us been let go of, so to speak, right, on our own since we were teenagers. And so, you know, a lot of us.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, so you can relate. So a lot of us don't have that reassurance of someone that's going to fight for us to the end, who knows us to the point where they know what we were capable of and what we're not. You know, a lot of us don't have that. So that's why I always lend my platform to parents and people who have it, who have that type of story, because like I said, there's no need for me to be upset about the things that I don't have versus being there for the people and understanding I need to be what it is I feel like I don't have myself. So, you know, I'm thankful that you chose me to come on up here and tell your son's story and your story inevitably, because, and Donna's too, to be honest with you, because this is all a purpose-driven moment for all three of you guys. And mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure for your other sons as well too, because they have to deal with the trauma of what's going on with their brother. And but for all three of y'all, man, I just want to continue to keep, you know, hopefully you guys are staying motivated. I hope for those people that are watching tonight and those of you that's going to watch the playback, whenever y'all see Jamie on your timeline, hopefully you guys will go in and, you know, like send them words of encouragement and all these other things, because it goes.
We have a website too.
You do? What's your website? Yeah. Plug it real quick.
TrumbullCountyIsCorrupt.com. T-R-U, M as in Mary, B as in boy, U-L-L, countyiscorrupt.com.
Gotcha. So y'all heard it from her. Y'all go out there and check the website out. See everything that's going on. Also, if you guys are avid readers, or if you're not readers and you want to get more information on the case and would like to support the book, please, y'all, go check out the book. And the book is titled, she has a pen she wanted to put up there, The Wrong Ride Home. The Wrong Ride Home, right? Wrong Ride
There's
Home.
There's no so, the. It's just the, Wrong that, Ride Home.
Right.
Wrong ride home.
I want to make sure.
And we'll be at Crime Con in Denver, Colorado in September. So we'll be there too at Crime Con.
Okay. Bet. So listen, y'all, we want y'all to stay locked and stay focused out there. And remember that when times like this and stories like this happen, we have to show empathy to people, because like I said, you never know when it is you. And these people that fight for other people, trust me, they're fighting for their own loved ones. They will fight for somebody else too. Trust me, because they know that it all comes back, and it all comes back around. And I'm just thankful that for Jamie tonight, I'm definitely going to reach out to Meg and let her know I'm thankful for connecting us. And yeah, so any last words you want to tell the audience before we get out of here this evening?
You know, if anybody wants to reach out, they can reach out. If they have questions, I'm also an administrator on a Facebook page that's called the Wrongful Conviction Support Group. Facebook page for the book, it's called Wrong Ride Home by Donna Waters. I have a Facebook page for my son called Justice for Austin T. Burke. I started that way back when, and a lot of the evidence has been on there, and it kind of shows our journey up through now, but you have to go back through years and years of posts. But the website, you know, is up. The trial transcripts are available for download on the website. Some of the witness interviews, the video interviews are on there. It kind of is a little bit, adds a little bit of context to the book. The book is also just now available in audiobook, and it's free if you have audible.com, or there's a Kindle version, there's a softback, hardback, you know. But if somebody is going through a wrongful conviction of their own, that book is a very good template for how to set up your own story and self-publish through Amazon, because it goes through the entire trial. It, you know, she summarized all the trial transcripts. She summarized the new evidence. Like, she interviewed us for 5 years and kept all her notes, but it can give somebody else an idea about how to set up their own story as well. And she also wrote Christine Bunch's book, and Christine Bunch is an exoneree in Indiana. That was her big sister. Wow. Christine Bunch is like a powerhouse voice for wrongful conviction in Indiana. And so she wrote Christine Bunch's book, and then she wrote my son's book next. Yeah. So
I would love to have Donna on, because I was going to say, like, that, you know, people, I mean, man, it's a bunch of special people out here in this world. I mean, I like to say that a lot of people have superpowers and they don't even know, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, most people equate superpowers to flying, walking through walls, being able to read minds and all that other stuff, but they don't understand, like, just to be able to do that and to be able to put it all together like that in a complete thought is a superpower. So I definitely would like to connect with Donna and see if she would like to come on the platform and we could talk a little bit about how she does that, because I think a lot of people's stories need to be published and moved around, because that's how we, you know, we protect ourselves, and it's through information. So
yeah,
thank you so much again for coming on this evening. Mm-hmm. And we're going to stay in contact. So make sure thank that you. We continue to keep growing and keep getting this information out. So for those, all of y'all that watched tonight, thank y'all, man, for all the comments tonight. Thank y'all, man. I definitely appreciate y'all. So remember, whenever this show is clipped up, I want y'all, when y'all see this, these shorts that be out there, please share it. Please keep continuing to keep Jamie and her family in your prayers. Make sure that you guys reach out to all the guests that we have on that's been dealing with things, man. Just send them the prayer emoji sometimes. I mean, just let them know that somebody else out here it really cares about what they're going through. It helps them motivate and keep going, right? Because it's a very lonely place when you're fighting for the right cause. Doing the right thing is a lonely place. You can have all the friends in the world when you're doing the wrong thing. But when it comes down to doing the right thing, it can get really lonely. So, you know, thank you again, Jamie. Thank you to all the people again. And remember, y'all, until next week, if nobody don't believe in you, you got to believe in yourself, or nobody else will. So until next week, peace.
Thank you.